Hey everybody, Patrick Kirby here, host of the official Do Good Better podcast. We are continuing our journey down the most popular episodes that we've ever recorded or ever had for the official Do Good Better podcast. Today's replay is Paul Zeiler. So when we talk about social entrepreneurship, I think everything kind of gets a little muddled, right? Are we a business? Are we a nonprofit? Are we both? Okay. Ugh. That gets solved in this particular episode. It also happens to be the 300th episode of the official Do Good Better podcast. So there's a whole bunch of reasons why this particular podcast blew up. But upon listening to it again, it reminds me that the nonprofit is a tax status, not a lifestyle, and it's not a business plan. And Paul talks about that in earnest. So I welcome you back to listen to our 300th episode talking about social entrepreneurship with our friend Paul. Hey, enjoy it as much as we did. Hey there, friends. Before we get to a brand new episode of the official Do Good Better podcast, we want to thank you, the listener, for subscribing and sharing with all of your nonprofit friends. Most importantly, we need to be thanking the sponsors to this very show. Hey, if you're in the market for a CRM system that makes your life easier, there is no better item in your fundraising toolbox than DonorDoc. DonorDoc is not only the premier sponsor to the show, it is the premier and intuitive CRM system that not only has everything you want, but has zero things you don't. No one needs complicated, especially when you wear 10,000 different hats at your nonprofit. So get DonorDoc and use Do Good Better at checkout and get a month free to try it out. Thanks, DonorDoc, for being an awesome sponsor. Hey, speaking of life being easier, fundraising is not. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a more content, more done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to either commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, join Do Good University. Hey, it's our brand new membership site. We have hours and hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the entire Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions. All of that is for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes for details. Hey, get ready for another episode of the official Do Good Better podcast.
Your organization is awesome, but sometimes you want to be even awesomer. It's time to get your fundraising on with your host, fundraising expert and author, Patrick Kirby.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome to the official Do Good Better podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kirby. And of course, we talk with people who are going to help our small and medium-sized nonprofits do good better. My guess is that you have gone to a board meeting at some point in time in your life, and then you are in discussions with your board members at that said meeting, and someone will bring up, we need more revenue. Or you probably have been sitting at a board meeting and saying, we need more revenue. And then everybody looks at each other as if we should go raise money or go get more grants. Those are fine options. Those are fine options. But what if you have a handful of people who are on your board that are entrepreneurs and are very entrepreneur-centric, and maybe you could put a line item there that kind of resolves around social entrepreneurship. You put a business line item that you're not only, you know, sort of growing with actual revenue. Well, how would you like that? My guess is you're all nodding. I would like that very much, which is why we have our guest on today. Paul Zeiler, the social entrepreneur coach, has joined us today here on the official Do Good Better podcast. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Patrick, and congratulations on building something. I was just looking it up. You have 297 episodes as I was doing my homework, and we just published 292 episodes this morning on my podcast. So when I say I have a pretty good idea what it takes to do what you do, I'm not saying that in an uninformed way, just a deep out of what you've created, your commitment and the service you provide.
Well, you are, you're adorable right out of the gate. And I love this. And it's great to have you because I think this is a topic of conversation that I think a lot of nonprofits don't have because they don't know enough about either like a business model that you can be using within your nonprofit, or they just don't think they're capable of it, or they don't think outside of the box enough because it may be a little bit scary. And so what I love about this conversation today that we're going to have is you're going to unscare us with what business could look like in a nonprofit as another alternative revenue stream. That sounds good. But before we get started with all of that, that's our cliffhanger for the rest of you who are learning and have been on for a while. Is that we'd love to know a little bit about you. So why don't you give us a 5,000-foot view on who you are, what you do, and why we're talking today.
So I just want to say to your audience, if you're like a little intimidated and don't understand business models and all this stuff, my first career, I got trained as a community mental health counselor, right? I had a 15-year career here in Northern New Mexico. And my dad said, you're a do-gooder, right? So it makes sense. I'm on this podcast. I was the guy with a master's degree in community mental health counseling who was willing to be a partner with community groups on innovative initiatives, right? So I did a lot of work with the pueblos, the reservations here in Northern New Mexico, and we were bringing restorative practices back when kids got involved with, you know, court systems or the child welfare system. Did a lot of work around engaging young men as fathers. Did a lot of work around ending domestic violence and sexual assault, et cetera, et cetera. 15 years, right? Awesome career. Probably sounds familiar to some of your folks who are listening, right? Mm-hmm. Absolutely burned out, horribly burned out, you know, compassion fatigue. Had a kid, got tired of being a broke social worker, organizer person. And I was like, all the horsepower's over there in the business world. And like, I got tired of like fighting for the scraps while trying to do the innovative work. Had to figure that out. 16 years ago, we didn't even know how to find each other. Are we talking about social entrepreneurship? Are we talking about conscious capitalism? Are we talking about conscious business? Are we talking about social enterprise? You know, this was 16 years ago. There's been a lot of change in the past 16 years, but I knew that I had to go into the business world. And I was mentally freaking out because my training had nothing to do with business. So if you're one of those people who are scared, I tell you that story to say, hey, like I've gone from there to one of the leading social entrepreneur podcasts and consultants on the planet. I want to share with you a little bit about that journey, but I just want to say you can do it. Even if you're like me, you don't have an MBA, you're not an accountant, you're not formally trained in marketing. I have none of those experiences and I've been able to, you know, have an incredible career and make that transition successfully.
That's perfect. Well, see, that's the, I think we get locked down with like, I don't know enough. And I think even the smaller nonprofits who are like, I don't feel comfortable talking with donors or even business people because I don't have a relationship with business, or I don't know enough of the business jargon to understand. At the end of the day, there are people out there that want to make sure that your organization does well, because you're making an impact in the community, and they could care less if you know the acronyms of whatever their shipping company uses. All they want to know is how they're going to feel great associating with your organization and how they can help because it's aligned with their values in general. They don't care about the rest. They're all humans. You got a connection at some sort of level and it's going to be fine. You just got to breathe a little bit and just know that they're just like you and me. It's totally fine. So Paul, so walk me through. How would you describe, so I'm a board member of a nonprofit. Somebody comes up to this organization and says, we should talk a little bit about engaging or it's coming up with the idea of social entrepreneurship as an additional revenue source at our organization. I'm a board member. Go, what the hell does that mean? You just kind of like, let's start with the basics and then we'll get a little more advanced here, because I think that is scary. Because the term entrepreneurship is like, that's a risk-taking, sort of fly by the seat of our pants, we'll just do whatever thing happens, audacity-ridden sort of word. And then social, which I am trying to be good, and I just don't know how do you combine the things? Where do we start? How do we just lay the groundwork here?
Yeah. So when I go back 20 years, you know, I was the director of a nonprofit doing innovative work. We had a fabulous accountant as I was trying to make this shift. I was trying to help the organization that I was leading make some of this. And he said, his name was Martin Martina. And he was our accountant. He said, Paul, nonprofit is a tax status, not a mindset. He was trying to help me make this transition. And all you're doing is leaning into whether you're a for-profit, B Corp or a nonprofit, you are allowed to get paid for, it's called revenue generating activity. Just a tax stat. doesn't matter how the organization, as long as it's ethical and aligned with your values, how an organization brings in the resources that it needs to ensure that you go about your mission in a sustainable way is really, there's a lot of options there. And whether you're for-profit, nonprofit, B Corp, or some other entity, those are the most common in the social enterprise, social entrepreneur space. But he really started working with me 20 years ago. The tax status and not a mindset, right? So that's the first, very, very first thing, is to just relax, chill the F out about, you know, the donor and the grants are the only way nonprofits can get funded. That's absolutely not true. And in this economy where we are right now and where we're headed, according to the experts, I'm going to push back and say, do you want your entity to survive and thrive? And if the answer is yes, then you want to be looking at a wider range of bringing in revenue, some of that where you're providing value directly to individuals, organizations, municipalities, and they're paying you for it, right? It's not risky, it's smart. So that's where I'd start the conversation, Patrick.
You know, the not a mindset bit, which I will, from here on out when I use it, I will be blatantly ripping off both Martine and DePaul, just duly noted for the
steal this, right? Steal it and spread it far and wide, Patrick. You will save the leadership of many nonprofits many sleepless nights.
Yep. So just hereby declare that's just out in the open now. It's for the record.
Steal it and spread it far and wide, please.
Be good. The other thing too is that it's almost a you can do this attitude. You're almost giving permission for boards to be creative or use their skill sets in order to create a revenue source rather than be worried about how this is going to upset the apple cart because it's always the way we've done it before, which is the thing that just drives most, I think, organizations crazy with their stale mentality too.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
So it almost allows you to tap into a whole community of brain, like a big brain trust in your community to figure out how they're could be a revenue source. So what are you looking for when you like go into a nonprofit, for example, of like, are you looking for a specific skill set with those that you're serving? Are you looking for alignment as far as the values? Are you looking for a product? What's the first thing that you would go into and go, all right, this does have something that could be a social entrepreneur sort of business model line at a nonprofit?
Great question. And let me just back up just a little bit, Patrick, and say, if you're a board member, one of the biggest causes of burnout for talent, the amount of burnout in the nonprofit world, this is not a theory. I burned out. The amount of burnout in the nonprofit world is off the charts. Mm. So if you want to maintain talent, you want to keep them and retain them, this is a key to doing it because one of them talking to leaders in nonprofits all the time are reaching out to me saying, Paul, I'm trying to do this, but the leadership, oftentimes the board is fighting me every step of the way, and I'm trying to make some more space, take the pressure off, going after grants and donors all the time, and just like just moderate and spread around the load how we're bringing in the resources we need. So I'd push back on that board member who thinks they're caring for their nonprofit and say, actually, you're burning your people out with that mindset. So do with it what you want, but I'm going to push back.
Love it.
So when I work with social entrepreneurs, I think the same thing is true with any social enterprise. Again, it's not about your tax status, it's about your mindset. So if I was starting with a nonprofit leader, a board member, or an individual social entrepreneur, entities within for-profit organizations that want to operate more like a social enterprise, I ask four questions. And this is available for free as a handout on my site for anybody who wants to go deeper. The first question is your why. That's your core values and the impact you want to have. And it sounds silly, but a lot of nonprofits are fuzzy. And that fuzziness makes for a really hard journey, particularly in tough economies. We're already in a tough economy, and everybody I trust is saying it's going to get tougher, right? So doing a little bit of work about what are your core values, and if you have 12 of them, you haven't done the work, right? I'm talking 3 to 5. Mm-hmm. 3 to 5 core values, what they mean to you, why you're passionate about them. And then an impact statement, how do you want to move the needle? I want to help a lot more social entrepreneurs go out in the world and make the world a better place because business is the single biggest engine in a modern economy and harnessing it for good is the fastest way I know to make the world a better place. It's really simple. It doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to use big words, but you want to know what the impact you want to have is. Because that's where you engage people. That's where people can say, this is really interesting. Tell me more. And if you don't have core values or you don't have a compelling impact statement, then everything you're trying to do is going to be much, much harder. So that's number one. The second one is, who do you want to help? Right. I was telling you before we hit record, Patrick, one of my favorite social enterprises, a nonprofit social enterprise here in Albuquerque, is a small but fabulous nonprofit called Fathers Building Futures. Mm-hmm. And what they do is dads who've been involved, they've been justice involved, they've been involved, incarcerated, most of them, or have some pretty serious charges on their backgrounds, but they're fathers. And they use social enterprise, particularly a wood shop, that to help create sustainable revenue sources and a whole wraparound support system for dads like that. But the who is dads. They looked at the research and say when fathers get incarcerated and aren't involved in their children's lives, the multi-generational impact of that is really problematic. And that was where they wanted to make a difference. So their impact is to help, you know, support dads like that with a whole wraparound services and keep them involved in their children's lives. They're who are those dads, those justice-involved dads. Then you start getting into the what. What is the product or service you're going to offer? I see a lot of people lead with the product or service, but it's disconnected from their values and they don't really have a refined sense of who they want to help, right? So a nonprofit could say, we want to do a wood shop, but it's disconnected from their values. Same product and service as Father Building Future, but they baked it in really strongly, the impact they want to have, the who they want to help. And then you look at their what, and you're like, this is genius, right? You don't need a college degree. You don't have to necessarily, maybe you have ADD, or maybe like staring at a screen isn't your strong point. They knew that about their ideal clients, and they created a really smart revenue path, and they built everything from cutting boards to cabinets to coffins, right? And it's been a really strong, sustainable, grows every year in a sustainable way. And it's not just a job, it's a whole support community for those dads, right? So the what is baked in to this process. The last step of the process is the how. How are you going to tell this story in the marketplace that people say, I want to buy a cutting board from Father Building Future, so you get that revenue that's going in the sustainable way. But start upstream, get really clear about your why, then your who, then your what, and then you can start telling that story in the marketplace for that sustainable revenue.
One of the things that I love most about that four series of questions to sort of ask is that I think the temptation to be a social entrepreneur has the immediate ramifications in your brain of like, this is going to mission creep the hell out of my organization and I hate exactly. everything about that, right? So yeah. What this does is it gives you a lovely little framework to always reference back to of like, if this doesn't add any value to your, you know, your why, or you're like, well, it's a why, but, and... A why and you're like, no, that's not how any of this works.
No.
Because then you're immediately going to be a business rather than those that you're serving, right? Exactly. So this is an excellent way to counteract somebody on the board or somebody else in your leadership or team that go, oh, is this mission creep? Nope. This aligns exactly with what we want to accomplish because we have done our due diligence and we are very purposeful with it. And again, that's the other thing too, Paul, is that social entrepreneurship might not be for everybody, but if it is, but if you're going to do it, be purposeful with it.
Exactly.
So I want to be very clear about this. This isn't like a side hustle project that you should be, sort of playing around with. I mean, you can have a hobby, but as an organization, this shouldn't be a side hustle. This should be very purposeful as it pertains to extending your mission, allowing for more money to flow, and then really having a reason for people to pay attention to you, right? I mean, you can't hardly half-ass some of this stuff, because if you do, it's going to look like you don't know what you're doing, and then you're going to have this, you know, not egg on your face, but you're going to be like, now what?
Exactly, Patrick. And one of the folks, this is at a much larger scale, one of the folks that I really appreciate who articulated this well, Tom Bozo is the CEO of Homeboy Industries, one of the largest folks for justice involved, people who've released from prison and helping them get a job and reintegrated into a sustainable life. They have all kinds of things, from t-shirt companies to cafes to the largest network, 10,000 organizations around the world called the Homeboy Network, right? They're doing stuff at a scale that is pretty inspiring. I get to interview people like that. So I interviewed Tom, and he said, what I want to tell people is run it like a business. Homeboy Industries is a nonprofit, but they run it like a business. But what they do is they use their grants and their donations. They're in LA. They've built some incredible relationships with the Hollywood elite. It's a great story, right? They use those resources to provide some extra space, knowing that their clientele, somebody who's just getting out of prison, might get a call from a probation officer, say, get your butt down to my office tomorrow morning at 9:00. And they're like, but I'm scheduled to work, right? And they're like, if you're not there, you're going back to prison. They understand who they're helping. So they use those resources for the wraparound to build extra space. But he said, manage it like it's a business. Do it smart, right? Just because you're a nonprofit, again, that you don't want a nonprofit mindset. Run it like a smooth enterprise. That's what your clients deserve. They deserve to work in a world-class organization, is what Tom said. Yeah. Plus, that builds trust with your donors and grantors. And they've had an incredibly successful individual donor program, including among some very significant names in Hollywood, because they run it that way, right? They don't say, oh, our folks are just coming out of prison. We don't hold them accountable. Like, we don't have high expectations. They're like, no, we really want this to be an organization that both the folks who work here, our donors, our grantors are proud of, that they shout it out. But we use those resources acknowledging people need more support. They need help finding a place to live. They might need help with their substance abuse recovery. All that's wrapped in and baked into the organization. And they use those resources for those expenses and that additional time that you might not see in a business that didn't have that population working in the industries that they do.
What I love about that example too, and again, I feel like if you're listening, you're like, well, I don't have access to Hollywood elite and I don't have access. That's not what the purpose of that was.
It's a mindset. It's a mindset.
Right. Right. So your Hollywood elite could be your local mayor or the city Absolutely. Council member or the business owner that expanded just recently. That's your influencer list if you're in the smaller community. So don't get all messed up with that. But what it makes is a bigger point. And this is really an interesting piece when you're trying to attract major donors or larger donors to your organization. If you are an adorable little social entrepreneur thing and you're just doing little, like you're painting rocks and it's adorable because of whatever, you're not going to attract the investors who are going to look at this as something that is elite in their own brain as they're trying to wrap their head around how much they're not going to throw money at bad or cute.
Yeah.
If you have the audacity to build a business, and you've got a model that is very purposeful, you are going to attract the investors. And I mean that by donors or big businesses that can be way more relatable to how you're running it than you were before you introduced the social entrepreneurship to your organization. Your success will beget more success because people will be attracted to it because it's something, wow, that's unique and that's interesting. Or, oh, I didn't know you could do that. And that's going to pique the interest of people who have like-minded entrepreneurial brains who are the ones that run all the damn businesses in the first place.
Absolutely, Patrick. I was talking to somebody who worked with young people from marginalized communities. And he had an initiative that was on the surface about helping them get into exciting, innovative career path. But the way he was talking, he said, hey, can you take a look at my newsletter? And I was like, he's like, do you have any suggestions? I was like, I love the way you write. And the way you're appealing to your donors, you're appealing as this is feel good money, right? You're tapping into your donors who are, this person has significant donor base, but it's like the money, what we want to do, if you were open to it, is go after the money. Like, I live in New Mexico. Like, we have some real economic challenges here, right? We have a lot of kids from marginalized communities. Let's go after the economic development money which is a pool of money that's 100 or 1,000x bigger than the feel-good money. You're going after the feel-good money, which is a very small and very competitive in almost every nonprofit. We have a massive number of nonprofits for the, you know, just over 2 million people that we have in New Mexico, right? So everybody's going after that feel-good money. Let's go after this like 100 or 1,000x bigger pot of money, because you're telling the story, but the way you're framing it, it's feel-good money. Right.
Yeah.
So that's an example that I think a lot of nonprofits do. We're hesitant to like roll up our sleeve and go into where the big kids play. But that's where the 1,000x bigger pool of money is. Go for that in your own iterative. You don't have to rush, right? Do your homework. But when you have a social enterprise that goes beyond, you know, making pretty arts and crafts that don't necessarily have anything to do with your mission, then you're playing in a much smaller pool and you're limiting what's possible. And I've seen really small nonprofits, two-person nonprofits, three-person nonprofits, make that mindset shift, and suddenly they're like pitching for and succeeding seven-figure, eight-figure pools of money that they never would have conceived have been accessible to them. And what it took was to just get much more strategic about how they're leveraging social enterprise, because some very large organizations are bungling this conversation really bad. So if you come out with a strong mission-based social enterprise and it moves the needle on your impact goals, and those goals line up with large organizations, you can get the attention of any size organization, because there's a lot of people who don't know how to do this. Mm-hmm. And it's not that hard. It's just most people will let their fear or their uncertainty drive. Don't let the fear and uncertainty drive. Let the impact you want to have drive. And then suddenly it's like, even though there were a lot of times I didn't know what I was doing, I was willing to ask, I was willing to read, I was willing to learn. And suddenly I'm in these conversations that nonprofit Paul would have been like, I'm never going to be in a conversation like that. And that's my daily reality now.
What? So leaping off of that, because I think that's a really big question to kind of maybe get some help with, which is, what do I say when I get in front of somebody who is a business owner or a potential investor? Because I think that terrifies nonprofit leaders who have never played big, who have always played with that feel good asks. And now you're into almost the pitch. And I know we don't have 40 hours of coaching to work on, not yet. You just get a hold of Paul and he'll help you out. I mean, it's what he does for a living. But how would you give this really sort of high level advice of mentally preparing yourself for a meeting with somebody who has the potential to invest, but you're not typically having conversations with these big potential donors or big investors?
Yeah, it's a skill set like everything else, Patrick. So study pitching. What is the process of pitching? And again, one of the reasons I came up with this framework is, you know, knowing your core values, knowing who you want to help, knowing how your product or service is tied back into the impact you want to have. All that's going to help you tell a compelling story. And one of the things I found, like I literally now, I'm a consultant for New Mexico Angels. It's the largest angel investing organization in New Mexico, one of the largest Southwest. So now I'm on the other side of like helping investors find the entrepreneurs that want to, like, so I just started about 6 weeks ago, right? But when I say I literally am in conversations that would have been impossible for me to imagine, I see that all the time. And one of the things that you learn about investors is they don't expect you to have it perfect. They want to see, are you speaking to the issues? Do you have a team of folks who've done their homework? If you don't know certain things, are you open to partnerships with other people who have more experience? And can you have some really granular conversations? Let's say it's, you know, working with kids from marginalized communities, and you really want to make a difference in terms of innovative careers. But talk to me about those careers with AI. Are they even going to be here in 3 years or 5 years? Like, they just want to see you've done some homework. And then they're going to ask you questions, write them down, go do more homework, refine your pitch. It's an iterative process. We get better at pitching by doing. You have to get enough at bats, right? I didn't start in the conversations that I'm in now. I started smaller and I learned and I took a lot of notes and I learned from a lot of people who had more experience pitching folks than I did. And instead of saying, I can't do that, I said, I need to learn how to do that. right? It's a learnable skill. I used to think things like marketing and pitching and going after larger pools of money, that was a gene that I didn't get as a, you know, as somebody who was in community mental health. And I was like, no, marketing is a skill set. Pitching is a skill set. Storytelling is a skill set. Podcasting. I didn't know anything about podcasting, but it fit my goals. So I made it a priority to learn. And you get better at it. When I look at my first podcast episode and the episode that went live this morning at 292, I think I'm a little better at it. And partially it's because I've had a lot of at-bats, including a lot of guesting, right? So think about it as an iterative process and not something that you have or don't have. The book Mindset by Carol Dweck talks about the difference between a learning mindset or a learner's mindset and a fixed mindset. A lot of people in the nonprofit space have a fixed mindset. I don't know how to market. I don't know how to pitch. Take a learner's mindset. I haven't learned this yet. It's time to start building my muscles.
One of the things that I typically give it advice, if you don't know what to say, instead of asking for money, ask for advice, right? So it's like an easy way to get people's perspective. And now it comes at them from a totally different angle of like, I'd love to get your perspective as a business owner on what this looks like. That's your lead question into disarming them to say that you're not interested in, you know, of course you're interested in money. That's why you're there. But more importantly, you're tapping into their knowledge base and their passion project of like thinking about business. And that will naturally progress into, well, how can I help?
Yep.
And that's your freaking door that just got kicked
in. The social enterprise world, we call it market research. Right? And most nonprofits suck at it. You go say, hi, hey, I'm working on a thing. You know a lot about this space. You know, can I ask you 15, 20 minutes? I got a couple questions for you, right? And at the end of good market research, you say, hey, as I get a little clearer, is it okay if I circle back around and tell you what your information was inputted into and here's where we're going to go with it, right? And that oftentimes leads to some of your first customers through market research.
And again, I just want to reiterate, you know, if longtime listeners to the show will hear thought of these themes that we're talking about. Well, that kind of sounds like you're doing fundraising for Major Gifts, or that sounds like you're doing some iteration with your board development and getting the right players in the same team. I go, yeah, this is all the same. Like, we're teaching you the same thing. And it's just, you got to get your brain wrapped around it, right? Paul said it the beginning of the show. I will rip it off from now to eternity. Nonprofit is a tax status. It is not a mindset. And that kind of thing that you just got to wrap your head around is how you're going to start integrating, you know, some of these ideas that you've been probably bouncing around in your head of like, boy, we could probably pull something like this off for a really interesting revenue stream. And then that gives you something to report back to your board, give them something to do that's not just nitpicking at a line item here and worried about a $28 you know, breakfast that you had with a donor, and they can go concentrate on something big and bold and audacious that is a actual revenue source that's not going to require you to go chase down dollars or grants going forward. And it's going to make the burnout problem a thing of the past because you get something that you can all go for. And again, I kind of leave with this one too, and I'd love your thoughts on this, where I've seen a lot of boards dissolve into just utter freaking chaos when they don't have something to go and like to get towards as a team, as an effort. I would imagine that building something like this, Paul, is going to rally the troops of like, oh man, I can use all of our different skill sets within this leadership team in order to make this happen. And now we've got a common goal that's not only to serve our people, but it's also to serve a purpose, you know, within a revenue stream too. I'm sure you've seen it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's just way more fun to work with an organization that's proactively building something that's sustainable. You don't have to go back to the same donors that you went to last year and say, well, everything we told you last year is still true, except now because of inflation and because we have big goals, we want you to give us even more money to do the same thing. And they're like, okay, year two, and then year three, and year five. At some point, they're going to ask themselves, What are we doing here, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to, here's this shop, here's this farm, here's this computer coding camp that kids love and the parents pay for, whatever the thing is, when you have that and you're bringing people in, and like Tom Bozo said, you go in and you ask your donors, you point to it and say, hey, look, the folks in this shop, in this coding camp, on this farm, they have some special needs, and therefore we can't just rely on the market. But you can walk them to your farm or to your shop or to your kids' coding camp, and they can see that you're not just reading about it. You're walking into something that's changing people's lives in a sustainable and buildable kind of way. Then when you ask for resources, you're helping them understand why you can't just depend on the market. People will happily give over and over and over again in increasing ways at a much higher rate than if you're just writing a report and they're like, this is the exact same thing I heard last year.
Yeah. Paul, I'm sure there are people out there who are like, I need to know more about you. I need to know more about this, maybe how I can work with you, Paul, but they might not know where to go. Where on earth would they find you? How would they get to work with you? Give me all the details, please.
Sure. Somebody interested in possibly working together, my consulting site is my name, paulzelizer.com, and you can see some of the offers I have there. And if you're like, I just want to learn more about what this guy does, check out my podcast, 292 episodes of some of the leading social entrepreneur thought leaders on the planet. So go check that out at Awarepreneurs. The first part of the word awareness, the second part of the word entrepreneurs, awarepreneurs.com, or you can find us on your favorite podcast app.
Speaking of a favorite podcast app, if you haven't subscribed to this show, for shame, because you're missing out on a whole lot of Paul's coming into this studio and doing awesome things. So go and do that. Leave a 5-star review for Paul because he's awesome and he deserves it. And then immediately go back to the show notes where everything that you just heard from Paul and how to get a hold of him will be there. Click and follow as you... Paul, number one, thanks for the time. Number two, thanks for the brainstorming session here. I think there's a lot of good that comes from almost telling a nonprofit leader that it's okay to dream big about something like this. They don't get permission for that a lot. And I think you've done that today. And I so appreciate you for that. And I mostly, though, appreciate you being a guest here on the official Do Good Better podcast.
Thanks for having me, Patrick. And again, thanks for building this community. It's such an important topic. I wish you existed 16 years ago when I was fumbling around.
You're the greatest. I love it. Thanks for being on, my friend.
Thanks, Patrick.
Fundraising is hard. And as a listener to this podcast, I hope you found some insight and tips and tricks on how to make it a little less challenging. But if you're looking for a lot more content, done-for-you templates, weekly support, and a community of other do-gooders like yourself to commiserate, challenge, co-create, or celebrate with, I want to invite you to join Do Good University. It's our brand new membership site. We're going to have hours of on-demand trainings, exclusive guest expert webinars, and access to the Do Good Better crew to answer all of your pressing questions, all for an affordable monthly fee. So visit dogooduniversity.com or click the link in the show notes for details.